This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ah, crap! I almost forgot! Hey! Chaw! You're saving it for a good time!
What is it?
Big G! The best!
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Hey, check this out. Lou Gehrig's pants. Not a bad fit. Hey, you don't think that nerve disease of his was contagious, do you? Better take him off. I'm too important to this team. Big Stein can't be flopping and twitching.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Let's have a smell, all right? Ooh, wafting, wafting. Oh, everyone likes their own brand, don't they? This is magic.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Those goofy bastards are just about the best thing I've got going in this crazy world.
The Fan.
Hey, let's do this final hour. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Got a lot to get to. Loaded final hour of the show. Couple of quick notes. I do want to talk about one game in particular.
Yeah.
Did you see what Mike Elko accused Eli Drinkwitz of doing this weekend? Did you see this controversy?
Being a baby back bitch?
He is a baby back bitch.
I did not see it. By the way, the quarterback that Drinkwitz was so overly concerned of because his sister is a staffer didn't play.
Did not play. Yeah. Theo Weiss is a wide receiver from Missouri.
Okay.
And you don't know that name, and you shouldn't know that name, but I will tell you why. We're going to talk about him. He showed up in his hotel room in... where is it? College Station? Is that where Texas A&M is? College Station? And walked into his hotel room, and on the bed, there was a Texas A&M towel. This is a Missouri wide receiver. Texas A&M towel.
A throw blanket.
A throw blanket, thank you. And a card with a picture of a DB from Texas A&M who calls himself The Blanket because of the way he covers guys.
Yeah.
And he said, get used to this blanket. It will be real tomorrow. So this is on this receiver's bed when he checks into his hotel room.
Hilarious.
And everybody's like, oh my God, how did he get in there? How did he know what room he was going to be in? Like, who did he bribe to get this into the hotel room, right? Mike Elko was asked after the game, like, hey, and they end up winning, so to the victor go the spoils. You locked him down. How about that? Mike Elko was like, dude, Eli Drinkwitz did that as a motivational tactic for his wide receiver. He put that as the coach on his hotel bed.
Wow.
And then ended up getting embarrassed at Texas A&M.
I mean, it's a good thought by Drinkwitz to maybe piss a receiver off to get him to go crazy, but it didn't work out at all.
Did not work out at all. So I saw that and enjoyed that note from the weekend. Can we also ask why Tennessee's quarterback, Nico, not even going to try the pronunciation, ran out of bounds as the clock expired?
He had a Avery Johnson Kansas State moment. He forgot about the clock.
It's the last play of the game.
I know.
They were down 19-14.
Is he a redshirt freshman?
Redshirt freshman, I think.
Yeah, shirt freshman.
Just ran out of bounds. Clock expired. Didn't even toss one up to the end zone. Come on, man.
I know. It's more concerning that they allowed Arkansas, which, by the way, how did Taylen Green's not, how did his leg not snap in half? How did he play again?
I don't know.
That was an awful hit.
Awful, dude.
Bent the wrong way. Instantly grabs it. You're waiting for the bone to show.
This guy's dead. He's never going to walk again.
And he's out there. Rodgers had this in London yesterday. He got rolled up on. Falls back, I'm 40, and he's back out there the next possession. I'm like, how are these guys playing?
Do we want to make fun of or credit the ACC for handing another win to their lone undefeated team? Because that was the definition of targeting on that last drive. That was a clear, like, launch, lead with the crown of the helmet. I think you could look up the definition of targeting in their rule book, and that checked every single box of what targeting is, and yet they somehow did not call it targeting.
The funny thing was, Osweiler was on the call of that one with Reese Davis, and or maybe it was the referee they used for the hits, but somebody on the broadcast on Miami's Go Ahead Tud pointed and said, yeah, that lineman's...
They had three offensive linemen, like, 5 yards into the end zone.
Yeah, they're past the point where they, I think it's college, it's three.
Yes.
And they're past the 3 yard mark. This shouldn't have counted.
No.
And so they had a couple things that for sure went their way. The targeting one is the egregious one. It has nothing to do with wanting Mario to lose and Miami to lose. I just don't know what targeting is if that's not targeting.
I hate the rule to begin with, but if you're going to call it, like, there was a Florida player that got kicked out earlier this year for hitting a guy in the midsection with the top of his helmet, not even helmet to helmet.
Every week I am conditioned, anytime a quarterback is hit, I'm just conditioned to think that the kid that hit him is being ejected or that it's a 15-yard penalty, no matter what.
Right, no matter what happens.
And the fact that that happened.
In that moment in that game.
And there was no flag thrown. I was like, man, they have survived a couple late scares the last couple weeks with Virginia Tech and now this week at Cal. And Cal, you cannot lose that game.
Can't lose that game,
You
man.
Cannot lose that no. football game.
Nope.
25-point lead with four left in the third quarter? You need one score and that game is over.
Yep.
I would argue the game should have been over there.
Should have been over.
If you could have live gambled on Miami, it had to have been live line Miami like plus 8,000.
At least,
25 points?
Late in the second half, early fourth quarter. Ridiculous that they blew that
lead.
And
I was happy for Wilcox. His offense was looking good. His defense was shutting Cam Warden, the offense, down.
It's a great day for it, man. The college game day scene, I know some people are out on McAfee. I'm a huge college game day guy now. I think McAfee's hilarious, and I think Nick Saban has brought a legitimacy to that show that I genuinely enjoy watching it every weekend now. That vibe and atmosphere in Berkeley was awesome.
Well, the
weekend.
Kid that made the field goal, so they did his field goal for like tuition, so they McAfee raises the stakes on the second kick because the kid had the distance, he just barely missed it, and he's doing this in Skechers,
right?
No shoelace Skechers that have like Vans, thank you, plaid on them. And this kid gets another chance, and McAfee adds more money to the hurricane relief stuff, and so here we go. It's a $600,000 kick this kid has. And Herb Street's doubting him the whole time. I hate when Herb Street talks right as the kid's winding up to
kick.
Yeah,
give him a moment, Kirk.
Be quiet.
Come on.
And he's doubting him. The kid nails the kick. Place goes nuts. They asked this kid what time he got there. And I saw game day at Oregon State. I've seen game day at Boise State. This kid said he got there at 11:30 at night the previous day.
They partied all night. And then I think went home after game day and probably like slept for 3 hours and then went back to the stadium for the game. The atmosphere was great, too.
It was a fantastic atmosphere. And the stadium was rocking in a way that you don't see Cal Stadium rocking very often.
That hurt to lose that one.
You thought, here they go. Cal Bears, the pride of the ACC, and a mistargeting call and just inexcusable football to blow that lead.
How about this stat for you? Lincoln Riley now in his last 12 games is 5-7. And in his first 32 games at USC, he is 22-10. Oof. In Clay Helton's first 32 games, he was 23-9. They lost on the road to Minnesota.
On a late last second touchdown.
That
had to be overturned.
Yes. I'll let you play it, Swag. So this is, they asked Lincoln Riley to, you know, his thoughts and feelings after the game. Here's what Lincoln Riley said.
All right, obviously disappointing. Ending to the game. It's a hard-fought game. We knew this would be, we would be coming into, you know, a motivated team. A really good atmosphere, and we played really good football. Reality is, we did a lot of good things on all sides, but we did not we just didn't play good enough to win. At the end of the day, we put ourselves in great position there. At the end of the game, didn't get it done. Give credit to Minnesota. Those guys played well, played hard. It was a really close game. Obviously, it came down to just inches right there at the end. We've had a couple of those, and that's the frustrating thing for our team right now. I mean, we're two plays away from probably being 5-0, but those plays happened, and we've had opportunities to win those games. And so we've put ourselves in those positions, which is hard to do on the road against quality teams. But obviously, we're frustrated that we haven't finished them off and we got to close the gap a little bit better on any of the three sides, which we're going to hold all three sides accountable, all the coaches, everybody. We need to be a little bit better because we got the makings of a really good team. From 17-10 and driving to the end, there ain't decisions that you lament or looking back on what you did it differently. Off the top of my head right now, forget now the third medium, obviously, the play Miller got hit and the interception was a big play.
It's Lincoln Riley after the game.
Very Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, he just
kind of went a little British there at the end.
Two plays away from being undefeated, man. That's what you hired Lincoln Riley to be in year three at USC. They're only two plays away from being undefeated, and now they play Penn State this weekend.
That was one we highlighted on the show of like, hey, a little dicey here. Came off. They were a little sluggish against Wisconsin. The final score would not indicate what that game was. They were going into the second half trailing at one point against Wisconsin before they came back and blew them out. This is who I think they're going to be. I think they're going to beat Penn State this weekend, and that's not going to shock me at all. Now, if they lose, okay, won't also surprise me. I think they're just an up-and-down team, 8-4, 9-3 was in the realm, but they have to finish strong to get to 9-3 at this point. If you're going to lose to Minnesota, by the way, I loved our boy PJ Fleck. We're rowing the boat. Great interview at Big Ten Media Day with him. He said, we're the best 2-3 team in the country.
You're damn right you are, PJ. You're damn right you are.
He's largely not wrong, the Flexter, but that's a bad loss. You cannot be losing to Minnesota.
I mean, just imagine when, like, we're going to spend a lot of time this week talking about Dan Lanning and how big this weekend is for him and how he needs a marquee win and how pivotal it will be and how the perception of him will change drastically. If they beat Ohio State, that narrative's kind of gone. I don't know how the rest of the season will go.
It builds cachet for the name
without
and the hype
a doubt.
For sure, yeah.
Imagine saying they were hired in the same offseason cycle that we would be criticizing Lanning for not winning a big game in year three, and in year three we'd be saying USC can't even beat Minnesota.
Yeah.
When they hired Lincoln Riley, it was national championships, top five recruiting classes, he's going to dominate the West Coast,
yep.
And they can't beat Minnesota in year three. And oh, by the way, lost to a Michigan team who cannot complete a forward pass.
And literally in that game, you knew they were only going to run,
they can't
and you still
throw.
Gave up a 60-yard run.
You still gave up the runs, yep. And you still gave up 27 to them. It just, I find, you know how I feel about Lincoln Riley, I don't take him seriously. I think he's a glorified offensive coordinator. He's a 7-on-7 coach. I just find USC fan is finally done. It was all over social media this weekend. They were calling him for him to be fired, and they want to move on, and this isn't what we signed up for. But this reality of, like, people moving the goalposts of, like, well, it's a restart. He had to go get a new D coordinator, and now they're taking – you should have done that, and I'm not going to give you the benefit of the doubt
because
you should have done it when you got hired and realized that you need to play defense and have an offensive line to win.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams masked all of their issues. He is gone. Miller Moss isn't bad. He ain't Caleb Williams. His offensive line isn't good. They're not stout up front defensively against the run. Good luck the rest of the way, man.
Well, they had Caleb Williams last year, and they didn't win all their games.
No, they were 7-5 even with him, and what would their record have been without him?
Look, the only little nitpick, when he got to USC at that point, I can't say go get a new DC. At that point of his career, he had done nothing but be successful. There was another, I saw a tweet this morning from somebody that said, when Lincoln left Oklahoma, I vowed to buy every T-shirt of a team that beat him as he was at USC. He then laid out the teams, and he said, this is becoming an expensive.
This is a problem now.
This isn't even funny anymore. Now you're just costing me a lot of money.
Yeah.
The heat has turned up. I don't think they're going to fire him.
No, they won't fire him.
But I will say, you could say it was this year. I do think this year, whatever they end up being, it's this offseason. You need to be stout defensively next year. If you are not, because I think their offense is okay. They're fine. It's always been the opposite side. You could not stop Minnesota. If they're not stout next year and they're not competing for the Big Ten title, yeah, I think you're looking at Lincoln Riley getting fired.
I mean, they lose this weekend. You're 3-3. Still got a road trip to Washington later in the year. You got to play Notre Dame. You got to play Nebraska, who's physical up front. Rutgers yep. can run the football. You should beat Maryland, but
you should have beaten Minnesota.
Should have beaten Minnesota. Yeah. They're 2-3 on the year. So that was a tough loss for the Trojans.
Have you seen the stat too? By the way, in this new realignment stuff, have you seen the stat of the teams? It's like 1-8 of teams that are going two time zones over.
It's not good.
So this travel stuff, it's not just bad for student-athletes because, you know, school and the flying and the jet lag, all that. It's actually showing that it's
hard to
impacting
win.
The game.
Yeah, it's hard to win,
that
man.
It's hard to just keep traveling back and forth multiple time zones and be A-OK.
Yep, let's get to a couple of NFL things from the weekend. Did the Ravens kill off the Bengals? Are they done? Buffalo, what are you doing? Woof to the Seahawks and the 49ers this weekend. We'll start diving into some NFL stuff next on The Fan. All right, let's start diving into some NFL stuff from this weekend. Before I ask you what is your biggest headline from the National Football League, I'll just reiterate for the fifth straight week, now that we're going into week six, almost, got Monday Night Football tonight.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson should never start a game again in the NFL. He should be benched. Why is he playing? It doesn't make any sense. Admit your mistake, and I digress. Biggest headline in the NFL this weekend for you was?
I would add to that this morning, listen to my good friend Kent Carman in Cleveland. Because I love some Cleveland sports
radio. They lost
radio.
34-13. They were embarrassed.
Should have been 34-6. They got
it should have been.
They have a guy, Daryl Ryder. We've had him on the show before. He basically says that Stefanski has no say in this. That he's just being forced to play them, and they're just going to have to live in this hell. So good luck to Cleveland.
Have fun with a top three draft pick.
There's a lot of takeaways, I think. Like, I think it's the Niners being concerning is a massive takeaway.
Blew a 10-point lead.
Second double-digit lead you've blown to lesser-than teams. The Rams have no business beating anybody the way they're banged up, and the Cardinals are the Cardinals.
We have to take the Commies seriously now, don't we?
I'm not there yet. The Commies winning was great. The Bengals losing and dropping to 1-4 after being up 10 in that game.
Talk about blown leads in a pivotal game for you.
God, ooh, Burrow buddy. Was good until he threw that pick.
He was.
It's statistically, this is Cincinnati's best offense in the Joe Burrow era.
But their defense is horrendous.
It is. You cannot. My biggest takeaway, though.
Well, I think we all have the same one.
Do we?
Oh.
We'll see.
Oh.
Houston beating Buffalo is massive for playoff optics. It's good for narrative-based things. The Texans have not been clean. They didn't play a clean game, and they ended up getting Nico Collins banged up in this game. It was a combination of Houston beating Buffalo that's awesome, and what the hell is McDermott and the Bills doing? They were backed up pin late. Final minute of the game, Houston has all three timeouts. Buffalo chose to throw the ball three straight times and deep passes that weren't particularly close.
Yeah.
They were shorthanded today on that game, which no Shakir, but they threw it straight times. The play stops at the clock. Houston has to use no timeouts. They punt it. Houston gets the ball at like the 30 to 35. Fairbairn needs like 25, 30 yards. And you have three timeouts. Like, that was the easiest loss to see coming. Instead of trying to play for overtime and giving yourself the best chance, you gave the game away.
You did.
And I don't know how Buffalo today isn't screaming at McDermott. Might have cost him that game, which is pivotal in the playoff standing situation. And also, this is a playoff preview game.
They now have head-to-head losses against the Ravens and the Texans, who both appear to be playoff teams in the AFC after their performances this weekend. Here is McDermott after the game.
Tough game. I thought our guys did a great job coming back. Coaches made good adjustments. You know, just not enough in the end, and you know, it's on me. The end of game situation on offense, we needed to. We're a tough situation, three timeouts. They're holding three timeouts. I got a good field goal kicker. We needed to run the clock and move the chains, and that's on me. We didn't do that there, and that's my fault.
Yeah, I don't know that the counteraction of both sides of that. So Houston on the drive previous to that decided they were on like the 40-yard line, and they could have. I don't believe Buffalo had a timeout left.
No, they were done.
There was like 45 seconds left in the game. It's crazy how much happened in the final 45 seconds of this game.
Stroud had a bad pick in the fourth.
He did too, yeah. And they tried to throw it. They end up calling a intentional grounding because he got pressure and he just kind of threw it out of bounds. It was a either way call. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but they get called.
I think the receiver ran. It was an option
route. Might have been the wrong route.
And by definition, he hooked it.
But by definition, that's the way it works now. They could have run the ball, ran the clock down to 1 second, mm-hmm. and kicked a 58, 57-yard game-winning field goal. Mm-hmm. Instead, they threw it, stopped the clock with an incomplete pass, got an intentional grounding that then pushed them out of field goal range
had to punt.
So I was screaming at my television like, what are you doing, dude? You're on like the 40-yard line. And then Buffalo gets it and says, hold my beer. We're going to throw three straight incompletions and punt it right back to you at the 40-yard line and let you kick the field goal that you should have just kicked on the last drive.
As bad as McDermott was, Josh Allen's been around long enough. Don't you think
he had a rough first down game.
That was a bad game.
Maybe
he was 9 of 30.
Yeah, I know.
But maybe on rookie Josh Allen.
I see you taking a shot on first down. Let's see if we can catch him. Maybe get out to midfield. Maybe we can kick. But after that first one, you're getting looks. Even if the play comes in, I'm like, no, we're running.
Just run the ball.
We're going to overtime. We'll take our chances.
Try and burn up as much time as you can. Make him use a couple of timeouts. We'll probably have to punt. But that was such bad management.
I sprayed the line, obviously, on the over that game. So I was disappointed to hear that Shakir wasn't playing.
Yeah.
Coleman had that one. He had the one catch for 49 yards.
Yeah.
Put the 49 yards into the passing of Josh Allen to sum up the day. He was sub 95 yards passing out of one big breakaway play.
Yep.
He was 9 of 30 with a 4.4-yard average. Houston's defense deserves a lot of credit here. We know they were playing a little shorthanded on Buffalo's side, but Allen was just atrocious. The other one I need to mention, I have all the concern in the world as a Niner fan, okay? I'm not stunned to see that they've been banged up and they're a little sluggish out the gate. Guess what? You lose a Super Bowl, you don't usually follow that up with a dream season.
Defense is a bit of a problem for them right now.
Anybody got an excuse for what Seattle's doing?
No.
That was such
a bad
line.
What was that?
There was no Malik Nabers. Daniel Dimes. I've been saying it for weeks.
He went in there and beat him.
I actually did talk to Daniel Jones.
He's Daniel Jones again. He's no longer Daniel
Jones.
Well,
I ran it for $1.75, too.
Dude, he's been playing well for 3-4 weeks now. He's put this together. They just haven't won most of those games.
Seahawks still lead the NFC West, by the way.
Yeah, but
the winner of the game on Thursday night will be in first place at the NFC West.
That's a worse loss than the Niners.
Coming off of two bad losses for each of them. The winner will be, if the Niners win, they'll be 3-3. If Seattle loses, they'll be 3-3. If Seattle wins, they'll be 4-2.
Seattle's offense?
They were non-existent, man. That was a really bad performance, bad turnovers. They even were gifted a 100-yard, 14-point swing, fumble recovery on the opening possession of the game. I thought it was a touchdown, too.
But they didn't have a good angle, and they ruled it a fumble.
They said the ball was loose. He picked it up, ran all the way back. Like, you get a play like that in a game, that tells you, okay, today's going to be our day. They still lost. They were handed 7 points in the most miraculous way possible. And outside of that, they mustered 13 points of offense. That was an embarrassing performance.
Yeah, it's I don't know where Seahawk fan is at. I thought, you know, encouraging takeaway from Detroit. Yes, your defense got shredded, but you were super down. But
their offense
looked good.
It looked great, man.
And then the defense. Lawrence and Burns and Thibodeau. Yeah. They just wrecked that offensive front. Geno, I felt like, was under pressure every single time. And I know it's only 2 weeks, but DK's got a little bit of the fumbleitis going on here.
Not good, not ideal, especially in a pivotal moment like that in the game. Rookie quarterbacks, by the way, shout out to them, undefeated this weekend. Bo got a win, and he was yelling at his head coach, but made a couple of throws
managed
late.
Managed the game really well.
Managed the game well. Jaden Daniels did it again.
Would have had better stats if his receivers had hung on to the ball.
Troy Franklin dropped a touchdown pass Bo took the credit for, which is like that was the most Bo thing of all time, acting like he didn't hit him right in the hands in the end zone.
I'm just glad he screamed back at Peyton. You've heard me say this. I think he's overrated and washed at this point.
I think Peyton appreciates that. That's how he functions. Breeze did that all the time.
But Russ just kind of turned around and
walked away
last year. Like, okay, yell at me. I deserve it. Bo was like, to hell with you, dude. Get your play calls in. Bo multiple times is doing this, like,
go, hurry up.
Because he's got paragraph-long freaking plays, and if you're going to give him 10 seconds to call the play and run it at the line, you got to put your rookie in a good spot. That entire game swayed on the stupidest Minshew interception you'll see, throwing a pick six to Surtain. That was about to be 17-3 with Crosby just wrecking Denver, and then it swayed.
Whoop.
Tie game, boom, Denver goes up. They end up blowing them out.
Yeah.
Jaden continues to have a good rookie season and pounding Cleveland. Like, that was impressive. He had some good long throws. And Caleb has settled in.
That was a really good game for him this weekend.
He's starting to find DJ Moore. Roma Dunze's getting the ball. Like, he was getting some pass protection. Chicago looked really good.
Also, I think the reminder of that game was like, oh, that's right. There's the Panthers team we all thought that we would see when they had that one random win with Andy Dalton. Like, that's right. They are the worst team in the NFL. That team sucks.
I gambled on the Bears, and I had a cash out conundrum. Like, should I cash out? And I asked my wife, and she goes, no. Stick it out.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Ride this thing up.
And I watched that entire game. I had it on one of my quads, and Bryce Young got in that game, and nobody will talk about this. He should have had another interception.
Should have thrown another one. I didn't see any of the end of that. Yeah. Poor Brycey, man. Poor Brycey.
Not an NFL quarterback.
Wild weekend of NFL football. That the witching hour of the 10 a.m. slate was just... Oh, from the Saturday that we had to that early witching hour, dear God, that was perfect.
I had to explain to my wife what the witching hour was because she's a Halloween person, and she heard, and now it's time for the witching hour. And she goes, what?
Witching hour?
And I said, well, it's when wins become losses and losses become wins.
Thank you.
Anything is possible. Are the Bengals done?
Yes, they're done.
They're done for this season.
They're done for this year.
You can't overcome
their defense is horrible.
Horrible.
Horrible. Burrow has been playing really good. I gave you the numbers last year. He's been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL this year. He was outstanding this weekend,
and it didn't matter. I know that pick.
Welcome to life as Justin Herbert when you have to play with the 31st ranked defense in the NFL. It's hard to win games, isn't it, when you don't play complimentary football? They can't do it this year.
Yeah, are we going to have hot takes on Burrow if they don't make the playoffs?
Why can't he win? Quarterbacks are win-loss stat, right? Is that loss on him? He was 30 of 39, 392 yards and 5 touchdowns, but they lost because they gave up 41 points. Is that on him? And his kicker missed a field goal. He was great, but they're done. Their defense is terrible this year, and they got to address that in the offseason. Let's see what else we can wedge into the final 28 minutes of this show as we're rapidly running out of time. Baseball playoff takeaways as they continue today. And oh, by the way, hey, Shaedon Sharpe, he's hurt again. That's next. Well, slipped in this weekend. It was an unbelievable weekend of football. And the Blazers were that little meerkat, like poking their head up, like, "Hey, hey, hello, hello, hello. We're in the news too. We got stuff going on."
Did they really want you to know about the news going on?
They didn't want you to know, but it is newsworthy nonetheless. Robert Williams experienced a grade one left hamstring strain during training camp. He is going to miss 2 weeks.
That was the least shocking news.
Not surprised at all.
It's just 2 weeks, huh?
Yeah, only 2 weeks. He'll be back in 2 weeks. Don't you worry. He'll be back in 2 weeks. And let's go ahead and add to the list now, which includes a small torn labrum in his left shoulder the first game of summer league, a thumb fracture early on in his rookie season, an abdominal strain in 2024, which led to surgery and being out for the year.
Yeah.
And now a small torn labrum, again in that left shoulder, the same injury as the 2022 Summer League, right before the start of the season, as Shaedon Sharpe is expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks with a shoulder injury.
This is just awful news. Yep. I you can root for losses and want them to tank to get Cooper Flagg or Ace Bailey or whoever the hell. Losing Shaedon or and Scoot is not what you want on that journey. You want to lose games while he and Scoot are hopefully having better years. And Joe Cronin said as much at the media day. He basically said, you know, this is about development. This season is not about wins and losses. They all know they're going to suck. This is about seeing if Shea and Scoot are really dudes for you. Because through this process of rebuilding, the underrated part of tanking and becoming bad is that people don't talk about how hard it is to get out of the hole that you create for yourself. And you have to hit on these draft picks. And Shaedon is the first domino of this. This was the start of, oh no, we're not going to trade things for Damian Lillard to win here. We're going to stealthily destroy it and knock it down to rebuild it. We just didn't know it at the time. Shaedon is the start of that. They could have traded that pick, and you could have said, well, they would have overpaid. Well, yeah, they at least would have made a move, and it's not something we saw very often. And so Shade's the start of that. Baby Kobe, as I called him. So far, the story of his career is can't stay healthy. And this is a big bummer for me hearing this news on Saturday when I saw it. And I think it's devastating for Portland because, yeah, they can say 4 to 6 weeks. We all know how this is going to go. And if he's back in 6 weeks, awesome. If he's not back till December, won't be surprised. It's concerning. It's the same shoulder. It's just concerning that he can't stay healthy in general.
Their season begins in 16 days, if you're wondering the timeline on how quickly and what that would mean. So if he does miss, let's say, 6 weeks, which I think we can all assume, you're back sometime around Thanksgiving. And you would basically have missed, what, 15 games-ish early in the season, somewhere around that range by the time you get to Thanksgiving.
20% of the season.
20% of the season is already gone, and that's if he's back in 6 weeks, and that's if he stays healthy the rest of the season. The minimum he will miss is about 15 to 20 games.
It's also year three. I don't know if people trust him to stay healthy even if he returns, and it's year three, which means on a rookie-scale contract, this is when you start kicking around internally. How much is that extension going to be offered?
Yep.
And it's not that I ever thought he was in the realm of getting the $200 million rookie extension that some of these other players, Mo Wagner got this. Franz Wagner.
I'll take your word for it.
Just got this from the Magic. But it is like, how much are you giving him? This is when you start to talk about it internally based on the play. And so far, there's not really any play that I think lends itself.
He played 32 games last year. It wasn't bad. Yeah. He was decent, and he had some great stretches and moments.
But not enough to evaluate.
Not enough of a sample size.
Joe said as much at a media day.
And that was the thing going into this season, and I remember we did the segment after media day talking about their expectations, and we all know the team's going to suck. We all know that they're going to lose a lot of games. The way that they view it as a successful year is having clarity on the roster and clarity who you're building around, who you're sticking with, who you're moving on from.
Yeah.
Clarity is what they want. And guys not being on the floor does not provide clarity. That was honestly the biggest disappointment to me last year, outside of some of the way they handled Scoot, of making him start the year as an off-ball guard, which, by the way, we get that again to start the year. That should be fun.
People are going to point to Ant and say, Ant's the off-ball guard, and I can say, sure, he may start that way. I've seen Anthony Simons play. He needs the ball in his hand.
He's going to have the ball in his hand.
So you're going to have a non-shooter off-ball at occasion.
Which would be great.
You have a guy that I think he's a tweener, Ant. Yeah. I don't think he's a two-guard. And so it's just cool. We get to see that start.
That's dysfunctional rotation again.
Yeah.
But the biggest disappointment last year was easily Shaedon Sharpe not getting the chance to fully develop or get a full year two, if you will. And now you start year three with him being out for at least the first month of the season. It's a disastrous start to your year. And that's if he is fully on track to be healthy and back in 6 weeks and he doesn't get hurt again because another injury after that. And if he lingers and he bangs up his shoulder again, like just a disastrous way to start your year. Not to mention the fact that Robert Williams, who you're desperately trying to trade, is already hurt in training camp and maybe not healthy for the start of the regular season either.
Don't play a second. I don't want him to play a second.
Can we just get a garbage can for it? Can we get a washing machine? What are we at this point down in the offer for Robert Williams? So the Blazers said hello this weekend. Their season is 16 days away. First preseason game's coming up and already great news.
I put a poll question up during the break. Crazy week into college football, and from 6:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific, we had NFL games on, so how much MLB playoffs did you watch? All of it, decent chunk, not that much, or none, football season.
What's the leading results right now?
None, football season, 48.6, and not that much, 25.7.
That's where I would answer, and we'll close up there because it does continue today. We got some other poll questions. We got a Monday night football game tonight, and we'll wrap it up on a Monday next on The Fan. Quick look at the poll questions as we close it up on a Monday. I believe the line has changed, but yesterday Oregon opened as a 4-point underdog to Ohio State. What are we at, 3.5 now?
3.5 at A&A.
Some money coming in on Oregon.
I would have taken, I haven't bet it, but I'd take Oregon +4.
We asked, who's your early look headline? Ducks +4, Buckeyes -4. 53% of respondents so far saying Ohio State -4.
Okay.
So liking the Buckeyes there. We also asked, are the Ravens, after losing to the Ravens, are the Bengals done? 75% of you say yes. Then you mentioned the baseball one. Right now, 50% of you said you didn't watch a second of baseball playoffs. 29% said not that much. Only 7% of you watched all of it. Very early returns. We do have a 1-1 series tie in both of the National League series, which will go to New York and San Diego, respectively. Now we get the American League game twos today.
Schoolball on the mound for the Tigers.
How are we feeling? Are we happy? Are we excited? Are we enjoying it? Are we not watching it? How do we feel?
Didn't watch a second of Tigers guards.
Not a second of it.
I got to be honest with you. Saw a highlight. Didn't watch a second live of Royals Yanks.
Did not watch a second of it.
Controversial, I guess, in some base running situation. I don't really know.
I saw a little bit of the Mets Phillies game just because it was 2-0. Then they scored 5 in the 8th. That was on Saturday. So I watched that.
A little bit of that. I saw a little bit of game 1 Dodgers Pods.
That was a fun start. You had the 3-0 start right out of the game for San Diego. Otani,
I had that
the bomb
on my second TV. The whole time.
You're a Dodger fan.
I'm a Dodger fan.
You're a Dodger fan. How much of the other games did you watch? Did you watch all of them?
I had, not yesterday. I actually went to the Timbers game yesterday. People had tickets, so I ducked out, went to the Timbers game. And then watched the Dodger nonsense when
you got
back.
Mets Phillies game was great yesterday. That was great. I watched a chunk of that one. That was a really good game. Back and forth. Felt like the Phillies were going to lose, and they came back and took the lead, and they blew the lead, and then they came back and won the game. That was a really fun game. That's been an awesome series. I think we all assumed that going in. It's just hard, man. It's hard to cut through when your first game of the day on a crazy college football Saturday is Cleveland-Detroit, and it's 7-0. It just...
Well, Wednesday...
You're just not going to get eyeballs.
Wednesday, you will get 4 games. And they all sort of overlap, but we know both NL series will need a game 4 now. The game 3's from the ALDS. So Wednesday, you could see...
It'd be a nice little day of baseball.
All day, back and forth between TBS and FS1. So
I feel like most people are going to respond to that. Not watching or very little of it. We'll see if today's the breakthrough. But you do have 2 games going on in the middle of the afternoon. Tigers and Guardians and Royals and Yankees.
Yeah, I think having the multi-view option, if you have YouTube TV, is great.
Helps a ton.
But also, if you don't have a second TV, I can see why most people didn't watch most of it.
I mean, there was so much going on Saturday, legitimately, as the day went on, that I had the quad box, because you could do different of the... I wish you could pick your own. That's my only frustration, but they have...
some channels don't let you do...
Different combos that you can choose. So I had one quad box on my TV, and I had a quad box on my iPad of just football
games.
I was watching 8 different football games at the same time.
Well, it's not like... Look, the Mets-Philly series is interesting. The Mets just can't die. You cannot kill the Mets. Here's a spoiler alert. Be up by more than 3 runs on the Mets going into the 9th inning and you'll win.
Yes.
If you're not, they'll come back and tie the game. And we'll see what happens with Dodgers-Padres, because that certainly has been added. There's some juice to it after what happened yesterday. Darvish completely skunked that lineup.
He was awesome.
And Dodger fans were whiny little bitches yesterday.
Yes, they were.
We'll see what happens with Guardians Tigers, because the Tigers have their ace on the bump today. So this is an opportunity to tie the series.
Yeah, they got. They have to get this game.
And the Yankees. I didn't watch a second of that Yankee Royal game, but they barely won it. And if you can't beat the Royals, man, I don't know what it's going to take for Aaron Boone to be fired. But I'd imagine that should be it. But who knows at this point?
They have no stance. If he hasn't been fired at this point, if they don't lose again or they don't win again this year.
Yeah, we'll see if Reagans can have a second start in the playoffs the way he had his first.
It's never been more set up for the Yankees to get to the World Series than this year.
There is a red carpet paved out in front of you. If you can't win this.
That's the payrolls of those three teams combined against the Yankees payroll.
Exactly. That Jerkson Profar catch, by the way, where nobody knew if he caught it or not, was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Turning and taunting the crowd while Mookie Betts is rounding the bases, thinking he hit a home run, and then to turn around and throw the ball back in was hilarious. Monday Night Football tonight, I know you gambled on the Saints.
Yeah.
5.5 is your line, or 5, depending on
it's
how they...
5.5.
5.5. Yeah. We like in that cover. We still feeling good in our picks?
I mean, you're always
Saints
dicey.
Are kind of beat up.
Have you seen the Chiefs' offense?
The survivor pool is over again if Kansas City wins tonight.
Really?
Niners and Seahawks wipe the rest of the people out. There's one person with Kansas City tonight. So we'll see if we have to restart all over again or if we get a winner of second place.
We'll see, man.
Should be fun. That will do it for us. If you missed any of the show, go check the podcast, 1080thefan.com, at Dirt and Sprague and at 1080 The Fan. Thanks so much for being a part of our Monday. If you're watching on YouTube, like the video. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so yet. Great content up all week long. It is a big, big week here in the Northwest. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Colin is next. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.